Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them Locked On sent you. All right, amazing episode coming up for you today. First, obviously, over the All-Star break, Doug leads us back down the first half of the season road talking about best 4- and 5-man lineups. There's a lot of things to glean from it and certainly some great carryover for the second half of the year. We then give a little shout-out to the fans talking about some of those big plays and best games that you really liked from the first half. And it's a little bit of recall for Doug Norrie and myself as we get down in the muck and mire sometimes, watching every game, breaking down the film. We don't want to lose track of some of those beautiful moments. So shout out to everybody who gave us a hand with that there. And then we're going to go ahead and play you a little bit of audio from Matt Shook over on the Locked On Detroit Pistons podcast, because he gives us some background on where Blake Griffin might be in his career. And then really more importantly, though, a perspective on where the Brooklyn Nets are as a team in the landscape of the NBA. All that, of course, is coming up for you right after the theme music.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome back to the Locked On Nets podcast and the Locked On Podcast Network. It's your team. It's every day. I'm Doug Norrie, owner-operator, DFSR.com. Got you covered for your betting and DFS NBA needs. Got you all covered for basically every other sport over there as well. And that's Adam Armbrecht. Where isn't he, folks? He's on Sportscaster doing Nets coverage. He's also one of their lead NBA analysts. He's also the host of the One Giant podcast covering the New York Giants. Buddy, how we doing?
Fantastic, man. This is, I got to say, covering a sports team every game, every day of the week for Locked On and having an all-star break. Luckily, we're such a talented roster that we're still making moves. We still have things to talk about, but it's weird to not have games, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm going to be totally honest here. And I know that this doesn't make me look good from an NBA perspective. I didn't watch a single minute of the all-star game last night.
Oh, my God. You didn't watch Kyrie Irving set a franchise record for points scored in an all-star game, which I also didn't watch. But I'm just saying, I at least do a little bit of light reading on the back end.
Yeah. And does it like call into question my professional attitude toward the NBA? Maybe, except that's just not the NBA. I'm not into watching exhibition games. I get there's like cool stories. I'm not trying to sound like a defeatist around this or like bring the podcast in on a bad note. Just from someone, we watch basketball literally every single night of the year. And I don't know, that didn't strike me as too much to take away. Watched a few of the highlights and then realized I was like, okay, not a bad way to just get a little Sunday off from the NBA. And you said you didn't watch it either.
No. That's why I think my joke landed so poorly as I text you to say, ooh, it's a barn burn in the All-Star game, 66-47 going to the fourth. That was somewhere in the third quarter, I think. I had no concept. I caught some highlights, and it's fun to watch the plays because it is an exhibition game, so you get to see guys doing things. I mean, listen, Dame Lillard, he finished off the game with a borderline half-court triple, and that's what they were trying to do to close it out. So there's fun stuff there, but the reality is, I think maybe I'm too locked in on the meaningful basketball to really. I guess I don't get the reprieve, right? Maybe I should. I don't sit back and enjoy myself.
Yeah, you can add us if you think that we're lesser hosts, and then I'll just add you right back. Thanks for listening, and then ignore you the rest of the time. Okay. I do want to get into basketball here that does matter for the Brooklyn Nets. We've got a lot to talk about today. Actually, I want to make a note real quick. Tomorrow, we're going to have Ayaji Brown from USA Today. Really excited about this one. Going to come on. He's covering the Brooklyn Nets for that publication. Really excited to get him on, get his thoughts about the first half of the Nets season. Go check that out tomorrow. That should be a really good one. Also want to just like a quick look back here on the first half of the season. We're going to break down some stats from the first half. We threw it out there, some of your Nets highlights from the first half, it was great to get these because it's just you kind of realize pretty quickly how far the season can come along sort of without you noticing. So we'll talk about that as well. But wanted to look back at just some of the first half stats and some of the first half lineups that have been working, some that haven't been working as well, but we'll try to focus on the positives more than anything else. Wanted to look at first around just sort of net rating around the best 5- and 4-man lineups. And I think this thing is a little skewed because we haven't gotten too much of the trio of guys, the big three so far. They've gotten some,
yeah.
But not as much for as long ago as the James Harden trade happened. We haven't been really treated to a ton of minutes between Harden, Durant, and Irving so far, mostly because Kevin Durant has been on the shelf with the injury for these last couple of weeks. But do you have any guesses around what the best sort of, like, we'll start with four-man. The best four-man combination, I'll say you had to have played, I did set some parameters around this, you had to have played more than like 45 minutes, I think it was. Yeah, I put it more than 40 total minutes in terms of like the best four combination for net rating over the course of the first half of the year. Most of the top lineups finish in like the 40 to 50 minute range. If you start, you can really kind of like, you can boost them up. The net rating is going to be a little harder once you kind of like go into like the over 100 minute. But any guesses around where some of these four man units sit right now?
So that means that Claxton will be included in this then?
Nah, he unfortunately doesn't have. Well, it's actually, it's not that he hasn't played enough minutes. He's just not going to have enough in the specific combinations, right? Like, because that's the other part too.
I bet that he would.
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I bet that he would, because you start to think about just what he's been. We mentioned his defensive Raptor rating on last episode, but the combined total of getting on the court with enough players to, like you said, hit those thresholds probably won't work. I'll be interested to see, you know, at the end of the year what that looks like. If I had to, again, you had to throw out a four man, you really can't include too much Kevin Durant. I mean, you know, you can, but Harden, Irving, Durant, who would be the best fourth man? I mean, I'd be really curious if Jeff Green is the fourth piece in best four man lineups. Does he end up fitting into the top there? So, arguably saying, is there any world where like Joe Harris is getting swapped out at all? Though his Raptor rating has been pretty strong this year, I wonder if maybe the defensive downside of like a Kyrie Irving shuffles him at all when you talk about best lineups there.
Yeah, so this is like sort of like a trick question, because it's going to be hard to see this because of the current iteration of the team. And again, 40 minutes isn't a ton. So if I start boosting it up, we're going to get like just like probably a more meaningful sample size over it. But actually the best four-man lineup for over 40 minutes played together so far is Durant, Irving, Joe Harris, and your boy Jared Allen, RIP. Well, not really. RIP when it comes to the Nets. Allen does. But then actually the second one is Durant, Irving, Joe Harris, and Spencer Dinwiddie. So it's funny, because, and I think that this is one of these things where it's big early in the season. They played a lot of minutes when that was the starting unit, and they were just running roughshod over teams, like that first game against the Warriors, and then the Christmas Day game, right, where they just kind of like obliterated teams, and then not too far after that, Spencer got hurt, and then obviously Jared Allen got traded away. So it was really one of these things that only existed at the beginning of the season. When we start looking at meaningful lineups, though, so the ones that have existed for more than, I'll say at this point, like 100 minutes, and there's not a ton, but they are, it is really, really encouraging, because we have a 140 minute sample of Durant, Harden, Irving, and Joe Harris, and this team is just destroying people, right? This is 140
just
minutes.
Kiss.
Well, they have a absolutely ridiculous 125.2 offensive rating, and then a 107 defensive rating, so good for 8 plus 18, and that's in 140 minutes. That's just so good, right? Like, it's just one of these things where it's like, oh, right, when we do have the three together and then you add that shooter to it, you're going to kind of probably, I don't know, throw out. This is actually funny about where they exist now. When you have these three guys together, we can kind of start talking about anybody else behind them, right? Like, it to be DeAndre? Okay, that's probably fine. You want it to be Nick Claxton? I think we'd all just get, you know, sign up for that immediately. You want it to be Blake Griffin? Like, how much... what you can live with past those four, just because of the absolute offensive firepower that they bring, is really so encouraging. So that's like the first one that actually starts to look at a real meaningful sample size around, oh, this could be the four on a finals team, and what they've done in their, like I said, 140 minutes, the seven total games in 140 minutes, has just basically annihilated other people.
Well, and that's why I think, you know, we talked about it all year, and obviously going back to when they acquired Harden. Once you got Harden in the door, I think that's why all these other moves feel kind of, yeah, okay, superfluous, right? You mentioned Griffin, and we're really hyped about Claxton, but even we talked about DeAndre Jordan still being a component and a player on this team. He's had a couple of really nice games this year that we thought turned back the clock a little bit, but the reason why we don't care, or why you're not overly concerned, is because of the big three and then adding Joe Harris, where you just say, listen, 99 times out of 100, you're not going to be concerned about who that fifth guy is. And then because you have this nice collection of players, you get to maybe, and I'll be curious to see as you get into the five-man lineups, what do we see here as far as players that have kind of given that sample size early in the year that they can get used, maybe in small spurts, maybe in specific situations, to kind of just supplement what we know these superstars are going to be doing on a fairly consistent basis.
Yeah, there's an interesting one, too, one step below it. This is actually one you wouldn't think about. It's another four-man. It's DeAndre. Oh, I'll just start from the big. It's Joe Harris, James Harden, then DeAndre, then Bruce Brown. That lineup has killed people in 172 minutes. And that one's like, okay, wow. Well, you know, I wonder who the fifth person could probably be rotated around to whoever it's going to be. But this lineup has really, really crushed people as well. And that one may not be the combination that you think it to be, because it's like, okay, well, depending on who that fifth guy is, and again, it's probably been swapped around for a few different names, just having DeAndre and Bruce Brown be on the court together is not, and especially how we know that they've played even offensively, is not one that you would have thought too much about. I'll just go real quick. The best fifth man lineup for the season is a combination of that those opening day lineups where it's KD, Kyrie, Dinwiddie, Joe Harris, and DeAndre Jordan. And again, that's like the leftover piece from early in the season. When you get down into actual real minutes, it's interesting because without Kevin Durant, one of their best five-man lineups is Harden, Irving, Joe Harris, Bruce Brown, and DeAndre Jordan. That's the one we were just talking about a minute ago. So you just take that four-man lineup that doesn't seem like it'd be something all that special, but then you just put, you know, basically in that one, you put Kyrie on the court with that group, and you see that it's basically when you get these two offensive guys with anyone that can play any defense behind them, You start just becoming just a really, really net positive team. All right, we're going to go through some of the top moments that we kind of just grabbed from fans out there. Really excited to kind of go back through this because it's like I said before, it's easy to, when you cover the team every single day, to lose a little track of just the cool moments because everything feels so in the moment. Like right now, it just feels all about Blake Griffin joining the team. And then you kind of forget like, oh, they just had an unbelievable first half of the season. First, have to talk to you about our friends over at Rock Auto. Look, buying car parts right now, super intimidating. You go to the local place, you say a part, they disappear into the cavern behind them. You never know what's going back on there. It's like some kind of layer in the back. You're not sure what's happening. I suspect not much. And then they kind of come out and say, oh, we don't have it. We'll put it on order for you, or come back tomorrow. We're going to get it from the other shop. These are all things I've just heard in person from places. And I'm always like, what is going on with these car parts? Well, don't worry about it if you use Rock Auto, because their version of the layer is just an actual sortable database. You type in the make and model of your car, drop down menus right away, and the part that you need just appears, because that's the way they've worked it out, because they want you to have car parts be super easy to buy. And the other great news about them is you're going to get great deals on all these parts, 30 up to 50% off in some cases compared to what you're paying at those local places. And forget going to mechanics, so you don't even know what kind of upcharge they're doing to you over there. All you got to do right now is go to rockauto.com. Know they're a family business. They've been serving auto part customers for 20 years now. As that feels like even older than the internet. How old's the internet? The internet's like 10 years old, isn't it? Maybe it's longer. I'm not sure. Family business, 20 years, auto parts. It's all there for you. Go to rockauto.com. And all you have to do when they ask you, how did you hear about us? Just type in Locked On, just like our podcast network, into that little field. They'll know we sent you. And that's all you have to do. Go to rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need. Rockauto.com.
And of course, betting on the Brooklyn Nets does not have to be a guessing game if you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling. Get daily picks, blowout specials, wrong team favored picks, and Lee Sterling's lock of the day. Subscribe to Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by betonline.ag, wherever you get your podcasts. We turn our attention now, my friend. There's too much to talk about in too little time, or too much in too little. I don't know, something like that. But you mentioned the top plays, and I feel like sometimes you and I almost, as you said at the top, get lost in the shuffle of covering the team so consistently. So when I kind of threw out there on Twitter, hey, what do you guys remember from the first half of the year? It was as much about, give me a little refresher of some of the things that I should have been drawn to. Now, I will say, there was a couple of guys that threw out thoughts around the big performances from Caris LeVert before he was traded, so I think there's still some nostalgia in the fan base. But the big ones to me, one shouted out Bruce Brown, 29-point performance, obviously. That's relatively recent. But when you go back and you think about Shamit defending Booker in that Phoenix Suns big comeback game, that was one that reminded me for role players on this team and guys that have been up and down. You know, Shamet, we kind of look at him and wait for those looks from the outside and say, if they go in, you're having a good game. If not, we're pretty disappointed. But I forgot. I that almost slipped my mind that he was capable of and executed phenomenally on that end of the floor that really helped in key sequences in that game for a victory. Are there any other ones? Because I have a couple other that fans had said. But did anything jump out to you? Because I feel like it's recency bias for me. And I go, when Nick Claxton threw down that slam and elevated his legs above the rim, listen, that's only about a week old.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that it was hard because in some cases I'm like, okay, well, it's all sort of been cool, right? But then I do forget that there was these little stretches where we were complaining about the defense constantly, where things look like a turnstile, and some of that even feels just so far away at this point that it almost caught me sort of off guard, where some of these moments that were out there, I just wasn't like, I was like, oh, right. You know what I mean? Like these little moments, like for instance, the Milwaukee comeback where, this might be one of my favorites, but only because these keep getting thrown out and I just kind of keep changing. But the Harden offensive rebound, they got kicked out to KD and he hit the three and they won the game with about 30 seconds left. Like that was such a cool, like jump out of your seat moment that I think, I mean, again, like recency bias, because more recently this was put up on our Twitter feed, and so that's where I'm kind of getting it from. But like that really, like that kind of hustle play for Harden into the wide open three struck me as, oh, right. And now they went on to lose the back-to-back games in Cleveland right after that, and maybe that's why it kind of gets buried a little bit because it wasn't part of that most recent win streak that they've been on. But that was such a cool sort of like, I remember just like jumping out of my seat at that moment, like just doing a whoop. And I'm not a whoop guy. You know me. Like I'm pretty.
Very anti-whoop.
Yeah, very anti-whoop. But I got some whoop moments in this year. And I actually wasn't able to recall. I remember doing it. Like I can remember where I was during some of these moments, but I can't remember like what exact games they were. Right, that was where I had a little problem too. But I did think that Milwaukee one, just because of the team and sort of the way it happened and on the offensive rebound, something that had been killing the Nets sort of like by other teams, that was a very cool moment.
No, yeah, and frankly, for a guy that is very anti-whoop, you've been doing a bit of whooping this year. So that's just something for the fan base. Soak it in. Doug Norrie is starting to get gassed up. No, you mentioned that one, and that was Nets Hive shouted that out to us. In that sequence, it was funny because inside of that, Harden takes that triple shot there. And I said, you know, this is one of those guys that he knows instantly if his shot's going to be off. And he actually does seem to really know the angle at which he's going to be off, because he's done this several times where he seems to grab, you know, slides into the lane, really knows where to pick up his own rebound. And then, of course, it doesn't hurt if you have Kevin Durant waiting wide open at the top of the key. But one of the, I'll shout out real quick here to, this is at WJax99, Will, seems like must be his first name. He listed his top five as being the Phoenix game, and this was the LeVert last 40-point piece as a Net, beating the Jazz by almost 40 points, and think about who the Jazz are now in the landscape of the NBA, the home Clippers game, obviously, and then he mentioned that Bucks game as well. So, I mean, there really is, I think what's harder for me is to pick out the specific plays inside of those games, because we end up really analyzing these as a full game thread, right? What were the successes or what were the failures? So some big moments, if they don't come in an important game, or if they come in a loss especially, that can be hard for me to really hold on to and hang my hat on any more than saying like, okay, yeah, great, it was a nice play, but you lost. So that kind of goes in the loss column for me. It doesn't get chalked up as anything else. I will say, last thing I'll mention, I didn't say this after the Rockets game. There was a sequence I forgot to mention when I flew solo, when Kyrie Irving goes full Harlem Globetrotters and gets down on a knee, dribbles, gets back up, and then tries in the lane. Like, this dude just continues to remind us. I feel like he keeps falling under the radar with Harden and now Claxton back and everything else. He just keeps reminding me, though, time and time again. And that's a testament to his talent, because I keep being surprised by him, even though I watch him every day.
And you know that move, and we didn't talk about it because we didn't podcast after that. That move, if Nets fans are going to remember this, it was sort of harkened back to a moment that happened with Kyrie last season in one of the few games that he played. It was against the Timberwolves, and it was very early in the season, where he was taking the buzzer beater, and he did a spin move, and he actually got off the ground And he ended up missing it, and that's why it kind of didn't go down as a big moment. But it was very similar to that. It was like, how on earth? Because do you remember this play? He kind of spin moves, and he falls. He goes completely up in the air. It looks like he should just kind of bottom out and lose the ball. Keeps the ball, somehow comes up, takes a shot, and then misses. But that reminded me of that moment because it was just a reminder of, oh, right, the ball, when he has the ball, oftentimes it is just completely on a string for him, right? Like he has
some sort of polar magnet.
Go ahead.
No, he's spinning and gets like bodied a little bit as well. So he's thrown off balance in the sequence of it. And like you said, misses it. And he's also one of the few players that you can say when he misses a shot, it could still be a highlight play for him because of everything that he does leading up to it.
Yeah, and we said this last year too. It's really been one of the treats for me personally to have moved into this Brooklyn Nets space around the time that Kyrie Irving did come to the team. We were podcasting before that happened, but just like, you know, really kind of dialing it up for our content coverage of the Nets, being able to just remind, because he was coming off the time in Boston and it was unclear about what he was and like, you know, whatever, all that other stuff that happened with the Celtics. From a strictly basketball perspective, watching him on a daily basis is just like a real treat that if you don't appreciate other things about him, which has been, you know, kind of, you know, part and parcel of what has happened with the coverage of him from strictly about whatever else you want to think about him. And we're nothing but Kyrie fans here, but to be able to watch him on a daily basis, because he can just do things that other players can't. Real two other quick things. I think we mentioned this last podcast, but it can escape you so quickly that the Nets started the season as the opening game on national television. And then a few days later played a primetime Christmas game. And I don't know. We're far into the season now. Those things can be forgotten, but it doesn't take much to think back and be like, wow, the Nets really put their stamp on a national stage in a way that it really hasn't been done for this fan base in a long time. And it's just a cool way. And they've done almost nothing but back it up ever since then to say that, yeah, this is a team that deserves to be on the national stage. And like I said, the Christmas Day ended up being a cool one because of it. We're going to respond to something that the guys over at Locked On Pistons said here in a moment in talking about Blake Griffin coming over to the Brooklyn Nets. And it's really less about Blake and more about kind of what I mentioned a second ago about the Nets sort of arriving on the scene and the Nets being a have team when it comes to the NBA. And I was kind of almost like, because I went into there thinking we were going to talk about Blake Griffin a little bit, and then it ended up being something different. But I want to get your opinion on this and about whether the Nets have just, I mean, I guess it clearly have entered into a new pantheon of where they're viewed around the rest of the NBA. First, got to talk to you about our friends over at Bet Online. Everyone's trying to get action in the games these days. It can be an interesting landscape to know where to do that, where you can do it safely with a place that you can find that's both secure, safe, fast, and easy. And that is Bet Online for all your betting sports action. Right now, NBA is about to kick back off on Tuesday with a full slate of game on Wednesday. College basketball entering into March Madness. Maybe you're into NHL. Get the guys on the ice every single night. Maybe it's not even that. Maybe you want to get in on some of the award shows, TV shows, reality TV. Look, folks, this is 2021. You can bet on anything, and you really can bet on anything when it comes to Bet Online. They got real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. Also got you covered for the news and scores as well. It's the best place to put in bets, and it's totally free to sign up. But if you want to throw in a deposit, know that first-time depositors are going to get a 50% welcome bonus, but you have to use the promo code LOCKEDON, just like our podcast network. So go to BetOnline, type in the LOCKEDON promo code for that 50% welcome bonus, and you'll be all set to go. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
And of course, when you need fantasy basketball advice, it's important that you have a reliable source. You know who I trust? Oh, it's Josh Lloyd, host of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast. I trust him more than any other fantasy basketball podcast out there. You can subscribe to the number one fantasy basketball podcast, Locked On Fantasy Basketball, wherever you get your podcast needs fulfilled.
All right, I want to play you a clip from Locked On Pistons today because we thought it would be sort of instructive. I went into listening to Locked On Pistons today with our boy, Matt Shook, who does an awesome job over there covering the Detroit basketball on a daily basis. And I kind of went
Big
in.
Shook just, Knight.
Yeah, I wanted to hear his take quickly on sort of like the Blake leaving the team and just sort of like his thoughts around like where Blake was. And I ended up kind of getting a different takeaway, which I thought was really interesting. We both listened to this, and we want you, the fam, to listen to this as well. So I'm going to play you. We're going to play you this this clip here from Matt Shook. It's a few minutes long, but it's instructive, I think, about where the Nets are sort of on this NBA timeline. So here's Matt, and we'll jump back in after.
What I don't like about the Blake Griffin buyout. Let's talk about that. So now Blake is going to play on the Brooklyn Nets for a super affordable contract. He might even help a little. Hey, he might even help a lot. And I've probably been too optimistic about Blake all year compared to what we've seen on film on the court so far this season. But everyone to me is just dumping on him a little bit too much right now and getting their Twitter blows off on optimistic Nets fans who might be thinking they're getting something like Blake Griffin from a couple years ago, which, by the way, was still only a couple years ago. I know probably a knee surgery, maybe even two since then as well. But I'm interested to see after a few weeks off, I'm interested to also see him in a limited bench role too. And maybe that's the fan in me of Blake Griffin, but I want to see him make some contributions in big moments. So sue me about that. But what I don't like is how the buyout, the signing with one of five teams, basically, whenever this happens, is such a screw job for the have-nots of the NBA, the teams that are down on their luck right now. This is a mechanism that's so tilted toward the good teams who are in the desirable locations, which, oh, by the way, usually go hand in hand. These aren't like brilliant organizations out in LA and out in New York that get these things done. This is a league that struggles with this stuff and where guys decide to play and kind of make an imbalance in the league. And this buyout situation is just another mechanism of that imbalance. It reminds me of the Batum buyout from last offseason, where Charlotte gets boned. They got to pay all this dead cap to get Nick Batum out of there. And now he goes and signs basically a minimum deal and plays a significant role for the Clippers right now and might in the playoffs this season. So don't say that these guys never make a difference in terms of the buyout market, because it's happening right now with Nick Batum in Charlotte. After everyone said the same things about, oh, he's useless this past offseason, well, what's going on right now? But the mechanism of it itself, each individual part of it makes sense, right? The Clippers signed the Blake deal, and then they shrewdly got off of it. The Pistons knew or should have known what they were getting into with the numbers and the length and Blake's injury history there. So they have to take the pain on the back end. That makes sense, but this is painful. I mean, this is just short of $30 million next season, already done deal, signed, sealed, and delivered for a guy to not play for them next year while they're one of the bottom teams in the NBA. Now, again, this is a mutual separation. Blake should be able to play for who he wants, and there's not a lot of money out there, so he has to take what he can get, which is not much. So the Nets clearly benefit from this system, but to me, the system just sucks. The bad team has all the dead cap. The good team gets a gift. And I realize that with this system, there's no easy solutions. There's no, in that confluence of events that happen, there's nothing that is so obviously wrong in the chain that's the part that needs to be fixed. So there's not an easy thing that's staring at me in the face about how to fix this whole thing. So maybe you have to get a little creative as a league and as a CBA going forward. I wonder if there's a way to get compensatory picks like they do in a lot of other sports for teams that are kind of screwed over by this. Or if you pick up a buyout guy on the other end of it, if you're the Nets, you have to surrender a future second to the ether, or maybe to the buying out team. Maybe that's decided by an arbiter who looks at the draft situations. Maybe it's a cash situation there too. Or let's say the more Blake plays for his new team, the more it takes off of this season's cap hit, or maybe there's a trade exception type of mechanism added to the league toolbox going forward that punishes the Nets a little bit and gives the Pistons a little relief in one way or another. I think that might be something for the league to think about.
All right, so Adam, your thoughts here. We heard from Matt. We kind of get the layout of, you know, his thoughts around losing a player into the buyout market and maybe sort of what should happen in terms of compensatory stuff for the team, because they're the ones eating the contract and yada, yada, yada. And I think that I'm not sure we need to get too much into that. But what were your thoughts? I kind of sent this to you. I said, I'm going to play this clip and I want to get your thoughts. And I think they ended up reflecting mine. We do some show prep before, but not tons. What were your thoughts here listening to Matt talk about and how he kind of viewed the Brooklyn Nets at this point.
Yeah, it's weird to put, as you said last segment, in the haves category, one of these teams. Like, we're one of the teams. In Matt's eyes, we're one of the elites. We're the Lakers. We're the, you know, just historically, right? We're the Celtics. We've been elevated to that tier in a season where, listen, on paper, all the expectations are there, but usually that kind of comes after you check a whole bunch of boxes. Even you throw the Miami Heat into that as well. And these are all teams, by the way, that were in the market potentially for the services of Blake Griffin. It's, I'm not surprised that that's the perspective, but I almost, my first thought was, being, you know, a Jersey East Coast guy, was, oh, like, we're like the Yankees now? Like, everybody just, that's it. You hate us, right? Like, now we're just hated. Like, now that's where we're going to end up. That's where this ends, with every other fan of every other team saying, well, somebody has to beat them, right?
Well, yeah, that was my takeaway too. Because I went in there listening for the Blake stuff, because I was like, oh, let's see if he backs me up on, you know, where Blake is in the arc of his career. Was he happy to see him go? There was none of that. And if you listen to his whole episode, he's actually a pretty big Blake defender. So, that was actually encouraging too, thinking there was a lot left in the tank that they didn't really see this year. So I walked away feeling encouraged about that as well. No, but yeah, that was the same thing for me. It was like, oh, right, like in with the Lakers, in with these other teams, in with these other halves, like, that can afford to just do whatever they want or like get whoever they want. And I'm thinking, is that really how people across the NBA view the Nets now? And I think maybe it has to be. Once they've added, it was probably the moment they added Harden. I'm not even sure that
Blake Griffin. Oh! I thought you meant
the moment they add Andre Robertson,
$1.29 million
off the free.
The second that Shumpert was signed in off the street,
it's one of these things. Like, oh right, this is where the target starts to get on your back a little bit. And you mentioned, okay, have they won anything? No, there's not been any meaningful wins that have happened yet. There's been nice regular season wins. We threw out a bunch of nice stats to feel good about the 5 and 4 man lineups. We've had some really cool moments that we look back on, from the first half of the season. But when it's all said and done, nothing really has happened yet for the Nets besides excitement. But to have that shift beginning to start to happen now, even without the wins, right? Even without the major, you know, the playoff victories or the sort of iconic moments happening yet, or the championships, if that's what's going to end up being what happens here, is to already be, and maybe, look, maybe, am I reading too much into what Matt said? I don't know. But I don't think he's off base in the sense that when you collect this group of players like the Nets have, which is basically as good or if not better when it comes to superstar talent than any other team in basketball, you are just going to end up becoming there. And is it, you know, Joseph Tsai, one of these owners that says he's going to go into luxury tax? Yeah, not every team has an owner that says they're going to do that. Not every team plays in New York. Now, whether New York fans see this group as still like sort of like second fiddle to the Knicks, I think that there's still something to be said for that when it comes to just overall fan bases, of course. But yeah, I did find it to be really interesting and sort of instructive about how the rest of the NBA is looking at the Nets, and Net fans should start to kind of, I don't know, might be time to start just embracing that. Like, it might be time to start, like, say, like, play the heel, play the villain here. Like, that might be how the team is being looked at in the general landscape as it is, and it might just be time to start leaning into it.
Yeah, and now I will say, and you're probably right, and that's also going to be difficult for me to handle, and I think any Nets fan coming up with it, maybe at a certain point as a fan, you get to start to puff out your chest and be, you know, hey, we're going to be confident, we're carrying the big stick right now, but it's hard for me to play that role. I like, you know, rooting for the rise of it, and this is the culmination of it, so we'll see how it plays out over the rest of the season. I will just put in one little footnote. The other thing that he mentioned in there about, you know, a team like Brooklyn should have to pay a penalty, or maybe Detroit should get something extra because they got Blake Griffin after they buy him out and he gives back money, all these things. I think, just in general terms, and I've been a fan of bad teams that have been in these circumstances, you don't get anything for making a huge mistake signing Griffin to a massive contract. Like, that's your organization's shame to carry. Did the Nets get him for 1.29 because we're in a good position and he wants to win a ring? Of course we do. But bad organizations, bad run organizations that make bad financial decisions, yeah, this is what happens. Like, Griffin gave you back $14 million. You still got some bad cap to carry. Nobody at the top end of the league. Like, Sean Marks, who's done a phenomenal job with our organization, by the way, raising it out of the depths over the last 4 or 5 years. Like, He doesn't have to give you anything extra for being amazing and shrewd and picking up these right players. And I'll the layer deeper of, yes, Sean Marks has gone out and been able to get some talented players. You have to go out and get them, though. You have to think you can reclimate a guy like Spencer Dinwiddie to go pull a Joe Harris off of a basically a practice squad scenario, right? Like, this is the reward that good players and formerly good players, whatever level they're at, they want to come play here because you're doing it right. So, and this isn't on Matt per se, but just in general. Don't give me those crocodile tears. If your team is run bad, get a better GM. That's what Brooklyn did. That's where we're at now.
Oh, from your lips to Nets ears, buddy. We're going to end it on that. The way you help the show here is you rate and review the podcast wherever you listen. 5 stars or bust, throw a little review in there. Nice numbers from the Blake Griffin episodes. We're really excited about that. And like I said, the number one way you can help the show is rate and review wherever you listen.
And don't forget, tomorrow, Ayaji Brown from USA Today on the podcast. Can't wait to talk to him. Don't miss that episode.
And I'm going to close it with a quote from this one from one of the great American poets, Brendan Urie. Had to have high, high hopes for a living, shooting for the stars when I couldn't make a killing. Didn't have a dime like the Brooklyn Nets, but I always had a vision, always had high, high hopes.
Oh, one of the all-time great American poets. We'll see you next time on the Locked On Nets podcast.